Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
I'm Rachel True.
And I'm Trent Venegas.
And you're listening to Quoting Gene Roddenberry,
the 100-day podcast that celebrates what would have been the 100th birthday of the man that created Star Trek.
Each day between now and the end of our podcast,
August 19th,
one of Star Trek's biggest icons,
or celebrity fans,
or both, will be quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Then we're going to take a deep dive into why we think this sci-fi legend still has a lot to say to the world.
Is read by Seinfeld royalty and Star Trek Voyager alumni Jason Alexander.
My other thought brings a pleased smile. It turns out the Trekkies have been right all along and on nearly everything that they have tried to tell us.
Welcome back to Quoting Gene Roddenberry, and it is my pleasure one more time to welcome our guest host this week, Gene Roddenberry's son, Rod Roddenberry, is with us this week. Rod, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me back again.
And we are counting down to the 100th days of Gene Roddenberry quotes, and we're so close to the end, and I don't want it to end, but this quote, I cannot wait to jump in and talk about it. So if you don't mind, I'm going to jump right in. And this idea that Gene talks about, my other thought at this moment brings a pleased smile. And I thought about that, when you think about, like, everybody knows what a smile is, and a smile is like a quick facelift for a grumpy Gus, and however you want to say, like, how fun and how nice smiles are. I never really thought about the fact of what a pleased smile is until I heard and read this quote. And when you think about the idea of a pleased smile, that's a smile that you do for yourself. You're not necessarily smiling to, you know, as in a hello to someone else, or as an acknowledgement of something. Or
I was actually just doing it. Sorry to interrupt, but I was pleased smile for myself.
Yeah,
and you're describing exactly what I'm feeling. Go ahead.
Like, when I think about a pleased smile, it's like it's something dawns on you and you like look kind of like off camera as if you're on camera, and you just smile to yourself. And that's what a pleased smile is to me. And it just evokes such a wonderful turn of phrase that Rod, your father, is so good at. Like, his way with words, he's a wordsmith. And it's just such a charming, another charming turn of phrase. And now it's one of my new favorites of all of the quotes that we've discussed so far.
Well, I think there's a marked lack of hubris in these quotes, Rod. You know what I mean? Seriously. And we don't know what anyone's like when they're not, but we know enough about your father's ethos, thoughts, and ideas after 100 quotes to know that this was actually who he was and a part of who he was. Because in an earlier episode, Rod described all the things his father had done before even becoming involved in television. And like, I'm impressed if I make it to the bank and do the dishes in one day. Yeah. And he was like, I'm a fighter pilot. I'm a cop. I save people. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. So all of those experiences, I think, do lead to being less in our ego and being more humble. And you've kind of hearkened to it a little bit yourself, Rob, when you've talked about our connection. Mm-hmm. To other people. You can't be hubristastic and feel connected to other people, right? Because then it's only you. You are the only special person. But I love in this quote that literally it's like you said, Trent, a pleased smile. There's something kind of quiet and delightful about that. Mm-hmm. But let's talk Trekkies versus Trekkers, because this is an important topic from what I've heard.
Well,
thoughts, gentlemen.
I just want to jump in. I know you guys have talked about it before, but I know Trekkies kind of got this sort of negative connotation over the years, and someone decided to bring in Trekkers and decided to make a distinction. First of all, in my opinion, there is no distinction. Secondly, Trekkies should be damn proud to be Trekkies. I'm more than happy to be a Trekkie. Call me whatever you want. But I don't know if there needs to be a distinction. Trent,
is there a controversy? I mean, is there a controversy over this?
I mean, in any fandom, there are always going to be controversy. Like, of course, if there's one thing that fans love to do, even among things that they love, it's to argue with one another about them. So I think that we can all agree on that.
Would you say Trekkies take it too seriously and Trekkers are like the right amount?
Honestly, I think it's the other way around. I think it's the Trekkers. And let me preface this by saying, like, I just like the word Trekker more than Trekkie. So I considered myself a Trekker.
Why? Because Trekker's active. Like, Trekkie is kind of passive and Trekker is like, I'm on a Trekker.
Yeah. And also, like, Trekkie also seems kind of diminutive, you know, like the little E at the end. But if I'm being honest, I feel like Trekkers are so serious. You know, it's like, maybe trying to be more steadfast to like the prime directive and like the way things are. No, like in this episode, episode number 3, season 4, whatever, Stardate, whatever, stuff that I honestly don't know off the top of my head. Whereas I think Trekkies are maybe like more freewheeling and happy-go-lucky and are just happy to just be a fan of, you know, they just love it. They don't have to prove that they love it.
Wait, well, okay, question to bring it back to the quote. What do you two, gentle sirs, think that your dad meant when he says it turns out the Trekkies or Trekkers have been right all along on nearly everything they tried to tell us? What do you think he's talking about there?
Well, if I can just first jump in, I do love the fact, and I think this is my own interpretation. And once again, I'm getting things from you guys that I really haven't come up with on my own yet, but that he's really bridging the gap between fans and writers and producers. There is such a Hollywood, well, I guess any industry, you have to be trained, absolutely. You have to have skills, you have to have knowledge. That's how you become the head of your industry. And that is 100% true in many ways. But in Hollywood,
except when it's not, right? Like, except when it's not.
Hollywood, it becomes maybe a little bit more ego and a little bit more, you know, I'm a writer, I'm a producer, I'm a whatever.
Wait, did you say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you say a little?
Yeah, a little. I did say a little.
I guess I was
probably trying to be nice. I have seen, my father has seen, we have all seen people with incredible talent all around the world, whether it's YouTube, whether it's whatever you see out there. There are incredible writers, incredible actors, incredible athletes, you name it. And they don't, they're not on a team. They're not producing television, but they damn well should be. I mean, they're incredible. And my father is saying that about fans. Maybe not all of them, but there are many fans out there who don't have, who aren't in Hollywood, who don't have a famous last name, who weren't born the son of, who haven't gotten in there yet, but you know what? They have incredible ideas and they're just as intelligent when it comes to Star Trek as many of the people that work on Star Trek. I'm not putting down people who work on Star Trek. I'm saying there are a lot of people out there that know what Star Trek is and can make great Star Trek.
That's really generous of you, though. That's very much in line with what your father would have said.
Oh, absolutely.
It's true. Have you seen it?
The two things that kind of like triggered in my mind as you were speaking, Rod, is like, one, we had a previous quote where Gene, your father, spoke in defense of the much maligned common man, the common audience. You know, he realized that the viewers and the fans of the show were not given necessarily the respect that he gave to them. And if I think about the fact that, you know, Gene saying that he is a lover of humanity, yes, and he probably loved, you know, Trek fans just a little bit more because they were with him from the beginning. And then that also reminds me of the letter writing campaign that the fans took up when Star Trek was in danger of being canceled during the initial run. And it was because the fans fought to have Star Trek live on. And so he understood, I think, that the fans get it. The fans get it. The fans, this is why this is where 55 years later, and we are talking about this so passionately. And there was a convention that took place in Las Vegas just last week to celebrate this story, this future, these characters that were created by your father, Gene Roddenberry, and all the wonderful Star Trek writers. And fans get it. And you know, if they're going to be heralds for that future that we look toward, where, you know, we eradicate hunger and we get rid of the monetary system, it's going to be the people that get it, that get these lessons that Star Trek is teaching us and has been teaching us for 55 years. Those are the people. Gene's right. It's the Trekkies. We've been right nearly everything.
And that's the distinction. And I'm so glad you made it. It's the people who get it, the people who understand Star Trek. Now, Star Wars has tons of fans, and I'm not putting Star Wars down. I love Star Wars. When I was a kid, I saw way more Star Wars than Star Trek. But the difference is these people don't just love the characters because it's an awesome, fun adventure. They love the idea that these characters embody and the future that they live in, and also want to live in that future and perhaps be as intellectually evolved as some of those characters. And I'm not saying we aren't. I'm just saying we're not there yet. We're still in our adolescence, as we said before. So that's the distinction. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was such a good point, Trent. Sorry, go ahead, Trent.
No, I was going to say, so, you know, I also love Star Wars. I love a lot of other fantasy and sci-fi series, books, comics, cartoons. When I think about, like, and not to make this an either or comparison, but since we brought it up, Rod, I love the Star Wars franchise.
As
I love Grogu, Baby Yoda, cutest thing ever. Love it. But those movies, to me, are very entertaining stories that I can watch over and over and over again. And they're like very encapsulated in its little world. Like, I don't think I'm going to be like, you know, Jedi mind tricking my way across the galaxy necessarily, because that to me is like fantasy as opposed to science fiction, which Star Trek is, where even the, you know, they talk about scientific things, they talk about invented science. So we don't have replicators yet, we don't have warp speed yet, we don't have transporter technology yet, but we also didn't have iPads before the pad in Star Trek The Next Generation. So for me, sci-fi and stories like Star Trek are much more beloved to me because there's more a tangible aspect of them that I can see myself in. And it actually gives me hope for that reality to maybe one day come to be.
Couldn't agree more.
I think both, a lot of these shows that we're talking about do a tremendous job of covering like the everyman's hero's journey. Because I think Star Trek, Star Wars does break that down in Joseph Campbell-y way real well.
For sure.
But so does every episode of Star Trek. I mean, each one is the hero's journey, right? And I kind of had a twofold question for Rod, which is I watched it like the originals, because I'm a grown-up, people. The original Star Trek, I was, or the repeats at least, I was sat in front of and were my babysitter, you know? So at a very young age, I was absorbing your dad's stories from the original series and the lessons I was supposed to learn. I heard a little rumor. You didn't watch so much of it until you were older. And so I know that I absorbed this, synthesized this stuff as a small child. And that was really good for me as a Black woman at that time period, by the way. What do you think you took away? This is twofold. I want to know what you took, what you think you took away from it as an adult compared to someone who watched it as a little kid. But also, per this quote, we didn't really tap into the... the very end of it, it says, on nearly everything the Trekkies have tried to tell us. What do you think your dad meant about that? And then what did you take away from Star Trek as a teen or whatever age you were when you started really digging it?
Well, I mean, just to answer part of that first, it goes back to, I think, again, what Trent was saying, the fans who get it. I mean, my father truly believes we're capable of living in a Star Trek future. That doesn't mean we have to have something called Starfleet and the Federation, but a future where we no longer fear difference and change, where we crave diversity, where we seek it out, where walking down the street and seeing someone who looks different, talks different, and thinks differently from you is something that you're excited to go engage with, as opposed to, you know, crouch up in fear and try to cross the street and get away from.
It's true you don't meet too many skinhead Trekkies, by the way.
No.
They're pretty open-minded. Like, you know what I mean, though?
Yes.
They're open-minded.
No, you're absolutely right. He really kind of knew that the fans out there who got that, he got enough letters, he got enough fan mail, he read stuff. It's not a quote that we didn't read it, but my father talks in one of his speeches or an interview where he says that he gets letters from high school kids or college kids and sends them to Caltech because they're talking about ways of doing new, I can't remember what it was, you know, quantum physics or something like that. And he has to give it to a scientist to verify it so that he can actually see if he can incorporate it into the show. So he has had this incredible opportunity by making Star Trek, by having all these incredibly bright young people send him their ideas. And even he has to have them checked. And when he does, he goes, oh my God, these guys are brilliant. So I absolutely love that.
So the second part was, what do you, like, in a sentence, if you want, what, when you finally were like, all right, I'm going to watch my dad's show, what is it that you were like, what was your impression, your takeaway, your, you know, visceral reaction?
Well, I mean, first thing as a young kid, you're absolutely right. I didn't watch Star Trek. Starsky and Hutch, Knight Rider, Adam 12.
Me too.
Anything with a car, you know, Star Wars.
Wait, I've seen those shows too. You might be a young Gen Xer, I'm thinking. Younger.
I'm 47, so I've enjoyed my 80s television quite a bit. So.
Yeah, I'm like, I know these shows. Yes. All right.
And in those shows didn't necessarily, and if they did, I didn't get it. They didn't necessarily talk about social situations, social issues. Some of them may have touched on it here and there.
A very special episode here and there, right. But by and large, they were very not.
The Equalizer had a lot of, but okay, carry on. We're not talking about The Equalizer.
But also, people mature faster than others. I'll be 100% honest, guys. I mean, if you speak to any of my friends, they'll support this statement. I simply did not mature that fast. I was not looking at the world and what's going on. I was very privileged. I was white, but there's my privilege in many ways.
You're still white, Ron. I'm still white. Convenient for you.
It is convenient. It is convenient. Unfortunately, in many ways, it is.
No, not unfortunately. As you said the whole time, we're all in this together.
That's
right.
Yes, that's true.
So
yes.
It's not about anyone feeling dot. I'm just throwing that out there. I know it's just a one-off joke, but seriously, because some people I think that the people of color want everyone. No, we want to all be in this together. As equals,
I guess I'm saying that white privilege thing. I'm sad it's still a thing, and it's not a human privilege thing. Anyhow, just sort of going back to that as a young kid, I just didn't pay attention to those things. So it was much later in life when I started to watch episodes and talk to fans that I really started to appreciate it. And the episode that I always go to, as it probably wasn't the first one I ever saw, but it was the first one that clicked and went, this is Star Trek, was Devil in the Dark. That is the rock monster, the Horda. The Enterprise is called in, spoiler alert, and there's been this rock monster killing miners because in the future we need to mine, I guess.
Yep.
And they're called in to destroy it, get rid of it. And I think at first maybe they try to shoot it, but nothing happens. And then Spock has the brilliant idea of it's a life form. Let's see what it wants. Let's communicate. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he communicates with it. We find out it's a mother protecting its young. And you know what its young are?
Yeah.
The crystals we've been mining. Who's the devil in the dark? Not that creature.
Right.
It's us. And that was, every time I tell that story, I get chills and I just got them again because that was the first time I recognized that television could just flip me around, smack me in the face and make you say, look at yourself, you idiot. You're the bad guy.
Yep.
And I love that. That is ultimate Star Trek for me.
I love what you just said because it's applicable to so many things in life. Like I hear so many people talk about their breakups and that person was all wrong. And I'm like, wait a second. What if we? Because I can't control anything they do. What is my responsibility? Am I taking the baby crystals from the mama? You know, where's my part in it? And that makes me feel more empowered than sitting around going, that person was terrible. You know, it just, I think it's what I love about your dad's quotes is they're all about empowerment of us as a humankind, right? Like just people, our empowerment. We are so deep into this episode, but I want to give Trent some time. What are your thoughts for the wrap up of this?
I mean, honestly, this is such a great conversation. They all are. And we really could go on. And we're very, very fortunate to have Rod for one more time. We have one last episode, Rachel.
Yay!
But
I could keep going, guys. I can keep going. Luckily, we got one more.
But we want to make sure that we send all of our listeners to the Roddenberry social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to watch Jason Alexander read today's quote. And we hope you'll join us again tomorrow, one last time, for Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Bye.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's quote. So tweet us. Post us, DM us, whatever.
We're at Roddenberry on Twitter and Facebook and at Roddenberry Official on Instagram.
Quoting Gene Roddenberry is a Roddenberry podcast hosted by me, Rachel True.
And me, Trent Venegas. Producing are Claire Kramer and Kelsey Goldberg, with executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Engineering and editing are provided by Elizabeth Joy Windham.
And special thanks to all those who were kind enough to read a quote and give a voice to Gene Roddenberry's everlasting words.
Live long and prosper.